Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 98, recorded Sunday, May 20th, 2012. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler, more about the journey than the destination. Two topics on this edition of the Travel Commons Podcast: airport train robbery and restaurants depending on your smartphones. It was 7 years ago this month that I recorded the first Travel Commons podcast in the bathroom of the Wardman Park Marriott in Northwest Washington, D.C. Actually, the actual date was May 15th, 2005, so I guess that would be last week, 7 years ago.
We're talking to you today from the bathroom of the Wardman Park Marriott. Don't have fancy reverb filters and all the other great stuff. So instead, I thought I'd just surround myself with a lot of tile, and hopefully this thing will sound pretty good.
Now, if I was a little bit better at sort of right-to-left planning, I would have had this. I would have had this be episode 100 instead of 98. I was actually in D.C. A few weeks back, staying actually up in Chevy Chase this time, a couple of stops further up the Red Line, the Metro Red Line, because the Wardman Park was sold out. But getting off at the Woodley Park Metro stop to walk over to Adams Morgan reminded me just sort of how long I've been doing this. I mean, longtime listeners will remember when this was a weekly podcast, and then it slipped to a biweekly podcast. You know, in that first year, I did 39 episodes. So 39 of 98 episodes were actually done, May 2005 to May 2006. Quite a difference to this year when, I seem to be working hard just to get them out bimonthly. It's not for lack of travel, though, or maybe because of it. I got some personal travel in, a long weekend in Brussels to drink some beer. Okay, a lot of beer with my son, and then a week in Puerto Rico with my wife, daughter, and another family, and then there was business travel to Phoenix, down to Florida, New York, D.C., which I just mentioned, San Francisco, and a couple of trips to Dallas. So less international travel than before the last episode. Instead, flying domestically during the huge smear of spring break. The family vacations that the month of March has become. I mean, so and actually, other than sort of jam full planes, I don't remember being too annoyed with the families. Except perhaps in Fort Myers, Florida, where spring break families plus full body scanners plus no status line, no TSA line for status flyers made for a really long wait. I mean, other than that, it just wasn't that bad. And I don't know if the parents are just being more vigilant, or perhaps I'm just more self-absorbed. I got more apps on my iPhone to keep me occupied. But like I said, other than Fort Myers, I mean, it's just felt less painful than past spring breaks. I don't know, perhaps the spate of airlines booting off families with unruly kids led to some throwback parenting. Quick nip of brandy at the gate before pre-boarding, shooting the kid up with a little Benadryl. I don't know. Just a nip of that brandy, because it couldn't be more than a 3-ounce bottle to make it past security. Following up, actually speaking of throwbacks, on one of my flights down to Dallas, I had what could only be called a throwback security experience in the TSA's new pre-check line. I walked up to the status-only security line in O'Hare's Terminal 3. I mean, there's usually someone at the entry point just looking at the boarding passes, making sure that you do have status. But this time she had a desk and a barcode reader, like the TSA use, further in to actually do the ID check. She scanned my boarding pass and waved me over to the left through a little swinging gate, But, you know, it really didn't register to me. I mean, for morning flights, I don't normally get my cup of coffee till I'm on the other side of security. The line moved quickly, and as I started to run my drill, take off the shoes, drop the jacket from my shoulders, pull out the laptop and the iPad, the TSA person told me, and every other person in the pre-check line, to stop. You know, put your bags on the x-ray, leave your shoes on and jackets on, walk through the metal detector and move along. I mean, it was too easy. I mean, it felt like I was like back at the turn of the century, like 1999-2000. It was a complete nostalgic moment. Now, walking through Old San Juan, when I was down there on vacation, I walked through some of those gourmet condiment shops, you know, the type that sells sort of hot sauces and fancy mustards and the like. And this one, you know, this one was called Spicy Caribbee, the shop was. And what caught my eye, though, was the package of three bottles in a one-quart plastic bag. The shelf tag had a picture of a plane and said, onboard friendly, meets TSA 3-ounce size limit. Actually, that was it was brilliant. First time I'd ever seen that. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I pass up buying things like that just because I'm doing carry-on, as we were doing in Puerto Rico. So my wife ended up buying, you know, the three-pack as a gift for a brother. Get to San Juan Airport. The TSA guy gave it a second look when it came out of the x-ray machine. He looked at it, but let it pass. I mean, if you didn't see that picture, I posted it on Twitter and on Facebook. If you didn't see it there, I'll put it in the show notes. It was clever. It was very clever. Apple has been launching new data services, it seems, with every iPhone release. So you have the FaceTime video calling with iOS 4. You had iMessage, that replacement for text messaging in iOS 5 that came out with the iPhone 4S. Now, they work pretty well in the U.S., but, you know, quite honestly, they really don't add that much value here. I mean, I have unlimited family texting, and I'm usually not gone long enough for domestic trips to really have a burning need for video calling. But when I'm overseas in Europe or in Asia, I mean, that's when I really need these products to work. Shifting calls and texts from expensive roaming to less expensive data, you know, either, you know, hotel or office Wi-Fi, or actually even AT&T's now fairly reasonably priced buckets of international data. But I'm not finding that iMessage and FaceTime, I'm not finding them to be that reliable. You know, when I've tried them in Beijing and Vienna and London. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it just feels like these Apple data services, I don't know, they're just not completely, it feels like they're just not completely baked in the middle. Now, trolling through the Apple support sites, I mean, the consensus seems to be that FaceTime requires sort of 100 and 150 kilobits a second of network bandwidth up and down each way to work. Now, for most hotel Wi-Fis that I've seen and measured using the app at speedtest.net, I mean, getting 100 to 150 kilobits a second download, typically not a big problem. But getting that on the upload side, that's where it can start to get dicey. I mean, most broadband is designed to be asymmetrical. I mean, it assumes you're going to be downloading a lot more than you're going to be uploading. But video chat services like FaceTime and Skype, you know, I mean, they don't fit into that assumption. They are symmetrical. You're sending as much as you're receiving. Now, with that in mind, I actually paid extra for the high bandwidth Wi-Fi at the Brussels Marriott when I was there in March with my son. I figured we'd be FaceTiming or Skyping back to my wife and daughter in the U.S., so I ponied up the extra €4 for the 1 megabit per second service. But, you know, Skype was still lagging and stuttering when we'd use it in the evening. So firing up speed test, I quickly saw why. We were only getting 256 kilobits a second, the basic service, not the upgrade I'd paid for. I mean, calling down to the front desk, I got the typical runaround. Oh, we're sorry. We don't know anything about the internet service. Here's the number to help, here's the number for the vendor help desk. I'll tell you, I've been down that three-hour rat hole before, so I skipped it. Went out for another beer and skipped that meaningless upgrade, you know, the remaining days that we were there. Now, one of the things I did like about the Brussels Marriott's Wi-Fi service was that, you know, the payment covered three simultaneous connections. In my case, it was my iPad, my iPhone, and my son's iPhone. And that is, from my experience, a rare acknowledgement to today's realities that, you know, just about every traveler has a bunch of devices that all need internet access to completely do their jobs. I mean, the Best Western in Brussels that I ended up staying at later on in the trip wanted 10 euro a day for each device. And, you know, with everyone posting experiences and photos on Facebook and Twitter and Foursquare and Instagram and TripAdvisor, I mean, you could say that sort of multi-device network access is more important to the vacationing family than to the business traveler. Now, in the U.S., this isn't a problem for me because I travel with a Verizon 4G mobile hotspot. I've talked about this before. Plug it in because the battery life is just this side of miserable. And bingo, you got five devices online. And more often than not, at a faster speed, you know, than hotel Wi-Fi, whether that hotel Wi-Fi is free or paid. Now, traveling internationally, the Verizon hotspot, you know, it's a nice paperweight. I mean, some folks I know carry their own mini wireless access point to extend their room's wired Ethernet. Apple's AirPort has been one mentioned a lot. But I don't know, rather, I'm always trying to just, you know, skinny down my kit. And so rather than carrying yet another piece of equipment, I end up using my MacBook Air kind of for that same purpose. Most Windows 7 PCs will do the same. It takes a couple of steps. You enable internet sharing and the like, and it's all well documented on the web. You are, however, back to being dependent on the hotel's bandwidth. Now, when I was in China in January where I used this trick, I could see the hotel network speed crash. I mean, just completely crater at around 6:30 every morning. Now, I don't know if it was sort of all the guests waking up and checking email, or I don't know, maybe the hotel was sending their overnight financials back to the home office, but Skype calls home would just pixelate, lag, and then just give up. Now, luckily, I never really got on to local Beijing time and was always up at like sort of 4:30 or 5 every morning, so I guess sometimes it's good to have just a little bit of jet lag. Hey, if you've got a question, a story, a comment, a travel tip, the voice of the traveler, send it along. The email address, as always, is comments, COMMENTS, at travelcommons.com. You can use the voice memo app on your iPhone or something like virtual recorder on your Android phone to record and send in an audio comment. You can always send a Twitter message to M. Peacock. You can post your thoughts on the Travel Commons Facebook page, or, as always, you can always go old school and post your thoughts on the website at travelcommons.com. So the first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is airport train robbery. Now, I have to be honest with you. I have been putting off writing this segment for over a month. I've written blog posts on the website about free hotel breakfasts and how American Airlines is suddenly increasing their, you know, their customer outreach, posted a bunch of stuff, more stuff than usual on the Travel Commons Facebook page. It really, just procrastinating because I just don't want to write this segment, but I know I gotta. So let's start out with stipulating something. I was stupid. Now, that's not actually a hard thing to write. I own up to doing stupid things on a regularly scheduled basis. The procrastination actually comes from how deeply embarrassed I am by my stupid acts. I mean, here I am, supposedly an experienced world traveler, seen, done most things many times over, gives advice to others. And here I am, or here I was, making the rookiest of rookie mistakes. Sort of the shame, the anger, the embarrassment, the more shame that burbled up every time I started thinking about writing this sort of made me push it away. Early Sunday morning in Brussels, my son and I finish our coffee in the Starbucks in the train station, unplug our sort of variety of mobile devices, and shut down the downloading and updating that we had been doing on the Starbucks Wi-Fi, head down the stairs to catch the train to the airport for our flight back to Chicago. We've been in Belgium for 3 days, eating and drinking beer, mostly drinking beer, but the train is a little late, but that's okay because this is actually an earlier train than we'd intended to take. We'll get to the airport in plenty of time. My son and I each have a rolling suitcase and a backpack. No need to check luggage for a three-day beer-drinking expedition. I put his suitcase on the rack overhead. The car got crowded as the train made more stops. I put my backpack on the rack also. I was reading the sports section of the USA Today on my iPad, catching up on the first two rounds of the NCAA basketball tournament, trying to figure out how badly my bracket had been blown up by some of the upsets. The train pulls into the airport station. I reach up to pull our bags out of the rack. I see my son's suitcase. I don't see my backpack. Instant shot of panic. Instant shot of adrenaline. I look down. Was I mistaken? Did I not put it up there? I look around. Did somebody pull it down by mistake? I walk over the seats, sprinting in front of the queue to scan people queued in the aisle. Can I catch the thief? I try to ask the train conductors. I run off the train, scanning passengers as they stream off the platform. No luck. My backpack is gone. So is my Nikon camera, my Jawbone Jambox speakers, my Bose headphones, my United Airlines drink coupons, my Moleskine travel journal with notes from vacations over the past 6 years, and our passports. So let me recap the key elements of my stupidity in some sort of time order. Putting our passports in the backpack instead of my coat pocket, putting the more easily grabbed piece of luggage in the overhead rack, having my nose stuck in my iPad instead of paying attention to my surroundings, all things I knew then and have diligently avoided before. I'd like to be able to blame it on the 3 days of beer drinking, but I can't. I was just stupid. I eventually go upstairs to the United ticket desk and confirm what I already knew. We can't get back into the U.S. without passports, so we weren't going home today. Now, the ticket agent was as helpful as she could be given the situation. She pointed me over to the police station that was just halfway down the terminal so I could file a report, and she rebooked us without any hassle, without any charges, even though we were on rewards tickets. We walked down the terminal to the police station. We waited only a couple of minutes. The officer was a great guy. Took my statement, quickly created a report. It was a painless 15 minutes. We get 10 to 12 of these a day, he said. So, little comfort. I am not alone in my stupidity. While he was typing up the report, I called the U.S. Embassy in Brussels and got through to a live person. And this is Sunday at about 11 a.m. in the morning. Not quite sure where this live person was, but she put me through to the on-call duty officer, who again was very helpful. Police report, good that I was getting it. That would be necessary for the replacement passports. He would have our names on the embassy admissions list for tomorrow morning and told me where we could get passport pictures taken on a Sunday afternoon in downtown Brussels. I hit the booking.com site on my iPhone and booked the Best Western right by the train station and just not that far from the U.S. Embassy. With all that done, there was really nothing left for us to do at the airport. So we headed back down to the train station and went back to Brussels. Monday morning, we packed again, hoping that we'd be able to get our passports in time to catch the 11 a.m. flight to Chicago or perhaps the 11:30 flight to D.C. We got to the embassy 20 minutes before it opened, and we were the first in line by only about 3 minutes. A very nice security guard had us queue a couple hundred yards away from the door until opening time. People in line were either replacing stolen passports, so again, I'm not alone in my stupidity, or applying for visas. So we walked to the security gatehouse right at 8 a.m. I mean, it was a good thing the duty officer had put our names on the admin list. They screened us one family at a time, everything x-rayed, but no full body scanners. Backpacks, briefcases, luggage all stayed outside, as did all the electronics. So you couldn't go in with any mobile phones, iPads, laptops. Luckily, I'd printed everything out at the hotel. They seemed to call the numbers quickly, though it seemed like the folks who were there for visas seemed to be moving through more quickly than we were. We watched the clock. We had to leave by no later than 10:30 to have a shot at the 11:30 flight. Our number was called. We go into a small room, my son and I on one side of bulletproof glass, the counselor officer on the other. And again, really a nice guy. I mean, he asked us what happened, walked through our replacement application. He was nicely probing. You could see where he was sort of checking the story out, making sure that our facts aligned. He sort of gently ribbed me, kind of jammed me, rightfully so, about taking better care of the replacement passports and told us he'd have us out shortly. I looked at the clock. We had a shot to make the flight to D.C. We went back to the main room and waited. And waited. And waited. Watching the clock, I saw our chance to get home that day sort of slowly dissolve. We waited an hour for our replacement passports. So we had walked in at 8 a.m., walked out at 11 a.m. Not a bad turnaround time, but not enough to get us home that day. Now, it could have been much worse. I mean, everyone I dealt with was very pleasant and helpful. My son and I took advantage of our extra time to sample just a few more Belgian beers. I had a very nice cassoulet for lunch on Monday that took a bit of the sting out of not making the D.C. flight. But, you know, sort of added up, my rookie mistake, paying more attention to the USA Today than my backpack, probably ended up costing me about $2,000, you know, between stolen goods, 2 days of additional room and board in Brussels, and the expedited passport fees. I don't know. As my dad always said, in life, there just are no cheap lessons. The second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast, restaurants depending on your smartphone. Earlier this month, I spent a Sunday afternoon walking the floor of the National Restaurant Association's annual show here in Chicago. I mean, if you need to be reminded how big the restaurant business is in the U.S., I mean, this show is huge. I mean, there's everything from a shrimp purveyor from the Mississippi Gulf Coast handing out samples to a commercial pot and pan seller having one of the top chef contestants, you know, sitting around signing autographs in their booth. It is. It's just astoundingly big. I went in with, I don't know, some vague idea of sort of checking out new breakfast food trends, perhaps for a follow-up on the blog post I wrote about free breakfasts being the best hotel amenity. But as I started wandering and sort of sampling around, I actually found myself sort of in the technology corner of the show. It felt a little bit like the nerd ghetto stuffed in the most remote corner of the smallest show floor. The most obvious trend that I saw was iPad menus, replacing the simple, cheap, printed piece of paper that can be tossed, dropped, and used as a coaster, replacing that with a $400 piece of computer hardware. I mean, this trend also then fostered another trend, a slew of vendors selling all shapes and sizes and kinds of metal to lock down these now very expensive menus. Now, what was more interesting to me, though, were the offerings that replaced pagers, punch cards, bar tabs, and credit cards with smartphones. Now, the pager one has always been a no-brainer to me. I just don't know why people, you know, still go out and buy those light up vibrating pager systems to tell you that, you know, your table is ready. I mean, you know, the systems, you know, if you look around, you know, starting with like about 15 of those coaster pagers, those systems can run, you know, $1,000-$2,000. And given this economy where restaurants are, that's a sizable chunk of change. And then, of course, sort of, you know, the cost of replacing those pagers that sort of walk off, get, you know, dropped in drinks, get run over by cars. I mean, those can end up running about $100 a piece. So replacing, you know, all that kit, you know, so thousands of dollars of stuff with text messages sent from a low-end smartphone at the hostess station, I mean, the return on that, you know, the savings there are just obvious. Now, the offerings that I saw at the show weren't quite so DIY. They actually were computer applications that combined waiting lists and wait time tracking and text messaging into a single iPad, of course, application. You know, at the end of the day, could you do it simpler? Yeah, but you know, for the short cost of an iPad app, it seemed to make a lot of sense. And quite honestly, I'd actually love it. The couple of places that I've been that have just texted me when my table's ready, rather than schlep it around that ugly flipping coaster, it just makes all the sense of the world. Tabbed Out was that's another interesting app that I saw. I mean, and basically, it just extended the restaurant or the bar's order and cash register system to your smartphone. So download the app, load it with your credit card, and you pay your bar tab from your phone, with, of course, the ever necessary integration to Facebook, Foursquare, and Twitter. But I mean, you think about it, you're sitting there, you can look at it. You go press to pay, it runs through on your credit card. There's also functionality to actually split tabs between a couple of credit cards. So if you and your buddy are splitting down the middle, boom, and then it emails you back the receipt. You know, from my standpoint, perfect for a business traveler. Level Up is another smartphone payment app. I mean, it's kind of like the Starbucks iPhone app. I don't know if you've used that. I use it pretty often. In that, the first thing you do is link the app up to a card. Now, with the Starbucks app, you link it up to, obviously, a Starbucks card, you know, one of those stored cash cards. Level Up, you end up linking it up to a credit card. And then when you're ready to pay, the app displays either a barcode, kind of a 2D barcode in the case of the Starbucks app, or in Level Up, it's a QR code. You just basically hold it up to a scanner for the cashier to scan, and then, boom, you're good to go. I mean, I use the Starbucks app all the time to buy coffee after I work out. I mean, so that way I'm not having to carry cash or a Starbucks card. Again, one less thing to carry. Level Up looks to be as convenient, but they don't have much coverage yet. I mean, I've only seen them, quite honestly, at least in the Chicago area, I've only seen them in a couple of food trucks, and I haven't really seen them anyplace else. You know, it's interesting, though, this push, you know, moving pagers, bar tabs, credit cards, you know, that sort of assortment of physical bits and pieces that restaurants handle. I mean, taking those and pushing them from physical assets to virtual assets, I mean, makes all the sense in the world as more and more people carry smartphones, and the penetration into restaurants' sort of target markets, and certainly bars' target markets, the smartphone penetration is even much, much higher. So it makes all the sense in the world. It assumes, though, that everyone can grab enough bandwidth for these transactions to flow through. When I was seeing some of the demos at McCormick Center in Chicago, I mean, they just crawled because everybody was hopping on bandwidth there because you had so many people in McCormick Center. So the assumption there is ubiquitous bandwidth, not always the case, which may explain another trend that I saw on the floor. Lots of booths peddling sort of low-maintenance ways for restaurants to offer Wi-Fi to their customers. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 98. I hope you all enjoyed this podcast. I hope it was worth the wait. I apologize for that, and I hope you decide to stay subscribed. The bridge music on today's show is from the CC Mixter site. It's a Creative Commons site. The songs in order of appearance: Another Girl by Duckett, The Long Goodbye by John Pasden, and Slinky Blues by Admiral Bob. There we go. And I really like it because they're all pronounceable song titles and group names. Anyhow, check out the show notes for links to each one of these songs on the CC Mixter site. And always, if you have a story, a thought, a comment, a gripe, the voice of the traveler, send them along, text or audio file to comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com, or M. Peacock on Twitter, or write them on the Travel Commons wall on Facebook, or post them on our website at travelcommons.com. Thanks to everyone who's taken the time to send in emails, tweets, and post comments on the Facebook wall and on the website wall. I really do appreciate it. And as always, take care, travel safe, and until the next time that I can put together, string together a couple of coherent thoughts, I'll talk to you then. Thanks for stopping by the Travel Commons. Bye now.
his hill. Strange bed in a lonely motel. But one thing can ease my mind. The warm woman that I left behind. From California to Carolina, she calls me up and there's nothing finer. And when the tears start falling,